From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan.
And a very warm welcome aboard the pirate ship, the Reeve Gauche, into the Captain's Table podcast, brought to you by Are You Not Entertained? I'm Giles Morgan. I'm not actually a captain.
I'm the captain.
Or indeed a pirate. But a vague ancestor of my family, Captain Henry Morgan, actually was one. And his family all came from Wales as well. This is a 30-minute romp of a podcast, where each week I simply ask my special guests to share their own personal memories of being a sports fan, and how that passion has affected and shaped their lives. My guest this week is fast becoming a British national treasure, which means he's getting old. For almost 30 years, Mark Pugach has been one of the leading presenters of sport in the UK, both on radio and television. With his courteous and gentle manner dovetailing seamlessly with his encyclopedic knowledge of sport, he is also a rare gift of being able to bring out the best in studio guests. He is synonymous with football, having hosted World Cups, European Championships, Premier League and Match of the Day, but his astonishing resume is something of a sports fan's wildest dream, having presented the Ashes, Wimbledon, World Athletics, Grand Nationals, World Darts and the Open Championship. Quite simply, he is the man you would want on point for the sports section in your local pub quiz. Mark Pugers, a very warm welcome.
Well, that's very kind of you to say all that. I didn't recognise that person.
Well, I thought I'd be nice to you at the beginning.
At the start,
yeah,
yes.
At the start. A warm welcome to the captain's table. Pull up a chair and make yourself at home.
Thank you very much indeed.
Good. And first things first, I need to get you a drink.
Yes.
And because this is a pirate ship, I'm afraid it means that we only have rum on board. So, will you have a mojito, rum and coke, a dark and stormy, the captain's secret coconut and pineapple mocktail, or a straight shot?
I'll have a mojito. Very partial to a mojito.
Perfectly.
And actually also very partial to rum, because I have two big sisters, and the number one of them lived in the West Indies for probably 10 years in two stints. Her husband's a deep sea diver. So they lived on a little island called Providenciales in the Turks and Caicos Islands. So I got, in my early 20s, I got very well in the ways of rum with my brother-in-law, Tony.
It's certainly the world's greatest drink, and why I think so many of the guests are coming on board. And I hope you're enjoying that one. So let's get to it. You spent 30 years boring us all, us the fans, about sport and being the presenter, and you've done quite a good job, and hopefully you'll carry on for a couple more years. But you must be a fan of sport yourself, and if so, where did it all start? What was your earliest memory?
I think it all started because my dad was a cricket obsessive. I mean, he was such a cricket obsessive that he started his own cricket club, which still got called the Grannies, which still goes very well to this day. And he made a cricket ground out of a field in the village we lived in, and I would be the groundsman with him. So all summers were preparing the cricket ground and playing cricket. He loved rugby as well. He was a very slow flank forward. He was mad about racing. My mum was mad about racing and about horses as well. Fun enough, as you've noticed, not in there, he wasn't really a football fan at all, but he put up with it because I love football so much. He loved Trevor Brooking because he thought Trevor Brooking was the biggest gentleman of all. So he loved that.
So you loved football. That was your...
Yeah,
that,
the football was me, actually. It wasn't really him. He played with me in the garden a lot. It was great. And he grew up in London, and his father was an interesting man because his father was a Jewish Ukrainian immigrant, so quite wanted to get into the British way of life. So my grandfather was told, well, to be more British, you need to love cricket. So I think my grandfather sort of shaped himself into cricket. And then my father, being an only child, loved cricket because cricket is great for only children because it's stats and numbers, particularly, you know, in the 1940s when there, you know, no television, you could lose yourself in it. So it was a very sporty family. Well, not a football family. My sisters rode horses and all that. But you know, racing on the telly all the time, rugby, we'd go to Twickenham when we could, we'd go to Lords. We didn't go to much football, actually, because he wasn't really that interested.
And was it your dad who took you typically to your first, do you remember your first ever match?
Yes, the first match.
Something?
So I grew up in East Sussex. The first match we went to was Brighton and Hove Albion against Notts County in the old second division. And Mark Lawrenson, who I, a lovely man who I've worked with a lot, was playing. Mick Vintner scored, though, it's coming out already, isn't it? Mick Vintner scored the first goal I ever saw live for Notts County. Brighton won 2-1. That was the first football match I went to. We went to a lot of racing when I was a kid and a lot of point-to-pointing. The first rugby match I went to was the varsity match because my dad was at Cambridge and he became a colleague and a lovely man.
And that was in the days when it was pretty full.
Yeah.
And it was
1975, Alistair Hignall played for Cambridge, of course, became a colleague. And the first cricket match I went to, we went to Canterbury a few times. The first test match I went to was at Lord's against India. David Gower got his leg stump knocked out and it hammered it with rain. And we ended up on the Edgware Road eating chocolate cake, you know.
You never forget these things.
Never forget those things. Oh, no, and that's right. We went to the museum as well. And in the museum at Lord's, as you know, well, then I went there the other day. I don't know whether it's still there. It was a sparrow which had been killed when somebody bowled an off spin or a leg spin, doesn't matter, and gave it a bit more air. And it killed a sparrow, which happened to fly past. So every time I went to Lord's afterwards with my mum, if it started raining, she'd turn around at me and go, oh, my God, we're going to have to look at the bloody sparrow again, aren't we?
So I think you may have answered the question. In terms of that fandom, was it your father who was the biggest influence you've talked about? And what was your first football? Who is your football club?
My football club. Well, am I going to answer that question? Because I sometimes don't answer that question.
You don't have to. Talk about your cricket team.
I tell you why I don't answer that question. That's a perfectly fair question. I think most people can deduce who my team is over the years. But I just think in my position, when you are, you know, you're a presenter of a football program, I don't like people talking about their clubs because I wouldn't want anybody to watch and go, well, you would say that, wouldn't
you? Right. No, that's
fair enough. It wouldn't say. But my cricket club is Sussex, and I brought for you here.
Oh, look,
this is original. So Dad and I went every single year to the Gillette Cup final, the NatWest final, beginning of September, which was cricket's FA Cup final.
Good
and
Lord.
Sussex reached the final in 1978 and beat Somerset, your county. Well, you probably weren't even born in 1978.
Yeah, you're very sweet.
And this is John Barkley. This is Imran Khan, of course. This is people like that. And I went to this game and I sat in the, what stand did I sit in? The Warner stand, that's right. And we got a wicket and I was jumping up and down with my friend Andrew and my dad said, you know, sit down now, we're not at football. You know?
But that's a real collector's. Yeah. I mean, I've got to describe this. Yeah. It's a sort of a light pink rosette with Somerset. Yeah. That's wishful thinking. Yeah. Sussex County Cricket Club, Gillette Cup final in 78. I mean, that's a collector's item.
Those are the Sussex Martlets. I was a member of the Sussex Martlets for a bit as a cricket club. Those six birds are the Sussex Martlets. And it was very trendy in those days. Not trendy, it was of its time in cricket and in football as well, actually, to go to a cup and in rugby, to go to any of these big games and find that there were rosettes everywhere. So they would sell them outside Lords. I just happened to have kept that.
Oh,
you won the next year.
Well, I know that because, funny enough, and I wish I had, it would be a great photo. So I've got the Somerset one.
Oh, have you? Yeah.
Somewhere at home.
Beat Northampton next year, and Viv got 100.
He did quite often.
Quite often. We would go every year. So 1978, I was 10. We would go every year to the Gillette Cup final. It was absolutely brilliant.
It was a wonderful. It was a wonderful tournament. That one, and particularly for a young child.
Oh yes,
you could understand the format. It was there
I
right
was
ahead.
60
of you.
Overs. It was a long day.
Proper day.
By the time I was 18, it was a very long day. I think it was the last one we went to when I was 18, when Sussex won again against Lancashire. And I think at the end of that, Dad said something along the lines of, if I'm going to buy you a ticket, could you do me the courtesy of staying with me beyond 11:30 and not disappearing to the tavern? Because the tavern in those days was a pub.
It was.
You know, it wasn't a stand. It was a pub.
Well, and that's where the expression used to be that they used to say of the Bothams and the Richards and others, of course, which was they had the ability to clear the bar.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And the tavern was the bar they based it on because people, you could see them coming up and over hang on, this could get interesting.
This could get interesting. Right, we're watching now.
So with your football club X and rugby and probably every sport as a sports fan, as so many youngsters are, who were your pinups? Did you have posters on the walls of footballers, cricketers, rugby players? And who were they?
So my football hero, my football hero was Kevin Keegan. I'm not a Liverpool fan, but he was the England captain. And I think even from an early age, people say to me, if I know a bit, have you learnt it all? No, it's because if you read the sports pages from the age of five, like I did, it just seeps in. I'm sure you're the same and hundreds of thousands of people are the same. You don't learn it, it just seeps in. And I'd read very early on, people were saying, well, Kevin Keegan's not the most naturally talented, but he works harder than anybody else to make the most of his talent. I thought, well, most of us are in the second category, aren't we? If you're very lucky. So I love Kevin Keegan. Alan Knott was my cricket hero because I'm a wicket keeper. And obviously, growing up on the Kent-Sussex border, we would go and watch Kent a bit as well. And I did have coaching one day in Tunbridge Wells on a crash mat with Alan Knott. I was about 10. No, so I absolutely loved that. And Derek Randall was a hero of mine as well because he was a bit barking. You know, all the stories about you'd go and see Derek Randall in the winter and knock on his door and he'd open the door and be wearing a new pair of pads because he'd be breaking them in. You know, and I love, you know, in those days you'd have Randall and Gower fielding at extra cover and at mid wicket and you knew that no one was ever going to take a single to them. And Derek Randall was, you know, Geoffrey Boycott came back in the team and ran him out at Trent Bridge. And he always seemed to be shuffling around the batting order. And there was the famous match in the centenary test match where Dennis Lilly bounced him and he took his cap off and all that. So I love Derek. So Derek Randall, Kevin Keegan, Liam Brady. I love Liam Brady as well. Yeah. What a educated left foot. And that might give you a clue as well, Liam Brady. And Alan Knott. I loved Alan Knott.
It's not bad. And would you say if you picked...
Dusty Hare. I loved it. Also Dusty Hare because growing up in that era, England were rubbish. Rugby, absolutely rubbish, apart from 1980.
But he got points.
No, but 1980, obviously being a Welshman, you will know. 9-8, Paul Ring and all that.
Paul Ring.
But Dusty Hare kicked all the points. So that I loved Dusty Hare was as well.
And so do you, when you reflect on those, either those heroes and or the teams, is there, if I had to put, you know, anodes and cathodes on your nipples, would you, from a torture point of view, if you had to pick one person and one sport, what would it be?
Sort of to take to a desert island?
Yeah, kind of thing.
Do you know, I'd take cricket to a desert island. And people might be surprised because obviously I'm a football presenter, but it's, without getting deep and meaningful, cricket is far more than a sport for me because my father died almost 30 years ago, so we never saw any of my professional career or my family life, which is a great sadness. But he inculcated in me such a love of cricket and what it means to the community and what it means to families and to people and to friendship and to fun and gregariousness. And you can have people of all varying abilities playing in cricket and loving it all. So it's just a sort of unbroken umbilical cord to him, really. Every time I go to Lords or any match,
it's
a homage to him, really. So it would be cricket. And as a sportsman, probably Alan Knott. That's why I was so pleased he got an OBE the other day. He was brilliant.
And that was sort of late call.
What was all that about? Yeah, how come Alan Knott gets an OBE?
It's actually not dissimilar. I don't know if you've seen the new Star Wars, spoiler alert, but there is a great moment in the new Star Wars film where Chewbacca.
Yes.
Which is, I think, the ninth film in the entire series, is the denouement, is presented with the medal that he didn't get in the first one. And no one has ever compared Alan Knott Chewbacca.
So there we are.
That's a news
flash. Also, being a wicketkeeper, one day, this sounds a bit of a boast, but it is quite fun. I played cricket and I kept wicket to Derek Underwood. I was 20. So at least I wasn't like 51 and slow. And I caught one.
How old was he then?
I was 30 years ago. He was probably 45, 50.
That's still coming through.
He bowled medium pace. There's medium pace. And he had four caught at Silly Point because it bounces, turns and bounces so much. You could think on a drying, sticky dog wicket, it'd be unplayable. And the last guy went to cut him and nicked it, and I just happened to hang on. And as we walked off the pitch, he went, Alan Knott would have been proud of that.
Oh,
I thought,
my God.
I thought, Derek, you're lying through your teeth, but I don't care.
But it doesn't matter.
That'll do.
I'm done now.
I'm done. I'm retired.
So not so much in, I think, club allegiances, and particularly, obviously, since you brought the rosette, you probably still support Sussex.
Yes, absolutely.
But in terms of, did any allegiances change from a young boy as particularly become a professional within the sports industry?
You can't, people say to me, is it hard if you support a football team to do your job? Well, if it's hard, you shouldn't do the job, but it's not really because you just put on a professional face because that's what you're paid to do. But it's just the same with England, to be honest. So in Japan the other day, when I came back, people said, were you really disappointed at England? You know, what a shame. Were you really sad that England lost the World Cup final? And I went, well, you know, of course I wanted England to win. If it had been England v Wales, that would have been really interesting, wouldn't it? Of course, I wanted England to win, but it's not my job to be sad. It's my job to tell what the story is. And obviously, the story was Siya Kolisi and an amazing win for South Africa. It's my job to reflect the disappointment. Of course it is, but I've got people to do that for me, Johnny Wilkinson and Clive Woodward.
So that's interesting. There will be plenty of sports events in your adult life where you've been a presenter, but you're not working because another channel has it or whatever. Yeah. and you're down the pub with your mates or at someone's house watching a game of rugby that you're not involved with, do you find that switch comes back where you can become a disappointed or elated fan? Or have you now become inured to
that?
No,
I know what you mean. I think if I'm in the pub, yes. But let's say it's in the World Cup or the Euros this summer. If it's a BBC game, not ours, I will still be thinking with a professional head on, to be honest. I will still be thinking in that sense.
So retirement is probably quite a long way off. I mean, you are old. You're a lot older than me. But do you think that will be something that you look forward to in a sense, where when you've hung up your microphone and lapel mic?
No, I think I'm so used to it now. And I think that's fine. You sort of sign a pact. You can't...
You're like a doctor.
You're like a doctor. I always say this. You know, I try to when students talk to me or people want to get in, I always try to make time to talk to them because people did it with me. And I say, don't do this if you think you'll want to carry on being a fan. If Liverpool means more to you than anything in the world, or the Welsh rugby team, or the West Indies, it's going to colour what you do. You cannot afford to do that. So, I mean, in the second half of England-Croatia, the football, I was thinking, when England was still 1-0 up, everyone else is chewing their nails. I'm thinking, if England win 1-0, this is the biggest result in English sport for 30 years. You're going to have to think of a really good payoff line here. That's all I could think of for 10 minutes. And so I wasn't swept away like everybody else because I can't afford to be. I don't think I could do the both, to be honest. And I hope I can still portray the excitement.
And that's the professional in you. And you've been trained and you were trained. You were trained to do your job. And without getting into the sort of the whys and wherefores of sports broadcasting, have you worked, without naming names, I'm not being salacious, but have you noticed that there are people you've worked with who maybe not trained, who've come in as former players or people who have come to speak where they've allowed the emotion
sometimes
to get in the way of the job that they're doing, which is being the eyes and ears for the general public?
Occasionally, as a presenter, occasionally. I mean, the pundits can do what they want. Yeah. I mean, I want the pundits to do what they want. I always say that Ian Wright is the nation's bellwether. You know, how are you feeling about this game? If he's up, we're all up. If he's down, we're all worried. You know, and I want them to be so. But occasionally, yes. And people might think, oh, that's a bit of a boring attitude. Well, no, it's not. It's because the South African example is the best one because, well, A, there are lots of South Africans who live in England, so why should they be disenfranchised for a start? You know, they pay their license fee, I hope. Yep. You know, so why should they be disenfranchised? But also, South Africa winning with the captain that they had and the story that they told, and 18 months ago they were a shambles, is an amazing story. And first and foremost, it's my job to tell the story. Happened to involve England, happened to involve South Africa, could have involved South Africa and New Zealand.
So let's get the timeline. You left Durham, whenever it was, 30-odd years ago.
The day after England lost to West Germany in Italia 90. Right. Oh, don't worry, I cried, I was... drunk as a skunk.
That's my question.
Yes.
So my question, when was, and I imagined it was, the last time that you cried at sport would be then.
Yeah, I cried then.
Because you were genuinely disappointed.
And funnily enough, but I went to Euro 96 as I was working in the industry, but I was working at Wimbledon, but I had tickets. So I did the early shift and I went to Wembley for England, Germany with my wife and my sister and a friend. So I went there as a punter. I didn't cry that night. I think I'd done the crying. Oh, I cried like a baby, Italia 90.
So I think we both did history degrees?
No, I did politics.
Clever. I couldn't spell politics. I did history. So... did you know, you're obviously a young boy, you've got a family that's inspired you in sport, you played sport. You go to university to read a sort of a general humanities degree. Was that with the knowledge that you were going to try and get into sports broadcasting?
Yeah,
did you have this kind of, was it vocational?
I think, because my father, going back to him, had listened to Test Match Special all his life. We were playing in the garden and it was on in the garden. I was 13 and I'm like, I'm like, Dad, are these people being paid to go to Lord's and eat cake and watch cricket all day? And he went, yes. And you've got to be joking. He went, no, they are. I went, well, that'll do. So I definitely wanted to be in broadcasting. I sort of, a third of me wanted to be a political journalist because I love politics, obviously. And I'm still fascinated by that, especially the last 3 or 4 years would have been amazing. But I just felt that probably on a Saturday afternoon in June during the World Cup football or the Test match at Lord's, if I'd been at Westminster, I'd be thinking, where would I rather be? So that's why I went down the sporting route.
And this is a question you could ask any sports fan anywhere in the world, but it is your industry as well. So I'm not asking with any, but I'm just fascinated. Who are your heroes as broadcasters in sport? Because we grew up, old men that we are, in the sort of McLaren era, and every sport had their voice in sport. Did you have one or two that you were, and you probably got to meet them at the tail end of their careers, that for you it was a kind of almost a homage to the industry you'd got into?
And of course, in those days, there were only two channels. So those men, and they did tend to be men because it was the 70s and 80s, they were elevated much more than today, where sports across 10 channels. I love Barry Davis's commentary. I absolutely love, and Barry's a charming man. I've met him. And Richie Beno taught anybody who ever wants to know about presenting and commentating, the art particularly of commentating and the value of the silence. I mean, so those two. Pedro, I mean, to be a horse racing commentator is an extraordinary skill. Yes, absolutely extraordinary skill. And then of course, if you're a presenter like I am, everyone loves Des, and I love Des. Des was absolutely amazing, Des Liner. But Brian Moore, football, was a brilliant commentator and a brilliant presenter. That doesn't happen very often.
To be able to do both.
I mean, he was a fantastic... If you watch the old tapes of the 1974 Football World Cup panels with Brian Clough, you know, they're smoking. They're smoking on screen and they're having rows. He was brilliant at the pair of those. So
at the beginning, I went through your really enviable... the resume of things that you've done, and you've travelled around the world, and I'm not shy on this either, but yours takes it to a whole nother level. But is there an event that on your own bucket list that you've never been to that
yes. you,
and I don't even mean working, just as poogers with some mates or your family or whatever, that you would love to go to that haven't?
Yes, absolutely. I'd like to do another Ashes as a fan. I've done 3 Ashes down under as a worker, which was incredibly lucky. But I mean, you know Andy Nicol, the Scotland scrum half, very well. And he asked me this at the captain's dinner in Battersea just before Christmas. I've never been on a Lions tour. I'd love to go on a Lions tour. And this one would be amazing because South Africa's time difference. But actually...
And world champions.
But I'd quite like to go on a Lions tour to New Zealand, fun enough, because it's New Zealand. I have been to New Zealand, but I'd quite like to go. I'd love to go on a Lions tour.
Yeah, well, I've done 2.
Yeah.
That's not true. I've done 4.
Yeah.
And it's a miracle I'm still alive.
Well, I just think that whole, you know, obviously British Isles coming together business is amazing. And I think we tinker with it at our peril at the Lions, don't we? We really do.
I couldn't agree more. I think that if you were trying to explain to someone not from rugby, what is the showcase of the sport that most embodies the game and you're trying to explain it, I think British and Irish Lions rugby explains it, because the very fact that for most of the time they're knocking the 7 bells out of each other and then they come together and blend, and so do the supporters, is an explanator of what rugby union is. I agree with you.
Yeah, I think it's incredible. I mean, I was at the chiropractor this morning, Katie, and she said, oh, we're going to go on the Lions tour. So we just said to the boys, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Is your back all right?
I
do worry. It's quite an uncomfortable boat, this.
It's pitching from side to side.
Oh, dear.
But I'd love to go on a Lions, and I will do what I'd love to go on a Lions tour.
Well, we can put that in.
Yes.
We can put that in the diary. Again, you've had the great privilege of meeting and working with an enormous array of talented sportsmen and women. Is there anyone that you haven't met that would like to have met or would like to meet from a sporting point of view, more in a fan sense of, gosh, it would be amazing to meet that person? I mean, you've obviously met lots, but other people, like, did you meet Muhammad Ali at any point? Did you have that, which is...
No. Do you know, it might sound slightly random, but... Very random, but football-wise, I'd love to have seen Cruyff play, obviously. I'd love to have seen more of Maradona at his peak. The Maradona film is extraordinary.
Yeah,
brilliant piece of filmmaking.
Absolutely.
The one person, I'm not sure I've even met him, I'd love to have seen play and therefore to meet properly, is Jimmy Greaves. And I know that might seem a bit, where did that come from? But I'm a Sunday morning slow village centre forward, and the game is about goals. And the Jimmy Greaves story, you know, they were talking the other day about, about Alan Shearer's goal record or whatever. Jimmy Greaves is still the goal scorer of all time. And anybody who says, I've talked to Glenn Hoddle about this, he says an extraordinary goal scorer. And the whole 1966 not playing in the final, and also there were no subs in the final when they were by 1970. Imagine it's 2-2 in 1970 England-West Germany final. Jimmy Greaves comes off the bench, doesn't he? Comes off the bench, of course he does. And what happened to Jimmy after that, and the fact that growing up with St. and Greaves, he was just genius. I'd love to have watched and really known Jimmy Greaves, because he just seems a phenomenal goal scorer and person to go with it.
Well, and the company.
The company.
You just know that would have been a great night out.
The great joy of my job, and I'm, you know, despite the fact I'm good at talking, I'm actually quite good at listening. And when I go out in the evening with people, and I know they've got, I'm very happy to sit there and drink white wine and listen to their stories. I mean, you'll be the same. You know them. They are sensational, particularly those who played in teams.
Yeah.
They are absolutely hilarious.
And the stories never dry up.
Never dry up.
And they don't get repeated. They're almost endless.
I've had some of the funniest nights out with these people, and the stories they tell, and you know, events that I watched on the other side, particularly as a fan. I mean, they are absolute genius. And they obviously didn't have the money, but they had more fun because there were no phones, you know, and there's no social media. There's no somebody dobbing them in. You know, I think they had a tremendous amount of fun.
So you've got kids who are sort of growing up fast, and we've both been involved in the sports industry for a long time. Do you see any differences now between the young fans that we were growing up in the 70s and fandom now? Mm. Obviously, social media, there's the whole, we all have devices, distraction. Or do you think it's as the same as ever, deep down, that the passion's still as strong?
I think the passion's still there. Things that worry me are, one, the cost. The cost really worries me of them.
I should just say, there's a helicopter flying over, which, given that we're on an 18th century rigged three-master, is an anomaly. But please just bear with us.
It's coming to pick us up. I'm worried about the cost for them, because I could pay £6, £7, £8 to go and watch First Division football in the 80s, you know, and you can't now. It costs you £50 to go to Chelsea, or I live in the South. Chelsea or Arsenal, Tottenham or probably West Ham, you know, that worries me. I'm part of the problem here because I work in the media. I'm worried we've made it all a bit too serious. You know, really, you know, it's all, I remember in those days, you know, team would play, they might play badly, they'd lose. You hear it on the radio, see it on Match of the Day, there would be a report in the paper and that would be it. That would literally be it till the next week. Because where was it after? You could write a letter to the programme, say they were rubbish last week, but by 7 days later, no one cares. It's fish and chip paper. So I worry a little bit that we are taking away that sort of instinctive, visceral joy of sport a bit too much. And as I say, a hark at me, because I'm in the media and we're the ones who pick up on it all the time. So that worries me from their point of view.
And I agree.
I want them to love it for what it is.
Absolutely. And it's Simon Barnes, the former Times correspondent, who is a writing hero of mine, always used to talk about the sense that sport matters because it doesn't matter.
Yes, yeah.
But sometimes I think the doesn't matter has been slightly eclipsed, I guess. And that's interesting.
There's somebody, and I think I said this line actually before the World Cup semi-final in the football. Somebody said it's something like the most relevant of irrelevant things or whatever. You know, it's the most important of unimportant things, something like that.
Yeah.
And at the time it matters everything, but actually afterwards you just go, like Joe Marler was very good at that, wasn't he? Joe Marler was brilliant at that after the World Cup final. Well, that was a real shame. Game of rugby, on we go.
Yeah, exactly.
Love to have won the World Cup, but haven't.
We've come to the bit that I'm excited about, and I think cue some some fusillade or something, called the captain's broadside.
Okay.
And this is the bit of the show where I'm going to ask you a series of quite quick-fire questions, just to give a flavour of your own fandom. So, what is your favourite sporting stadium?
Lords.
Okay. What is your favourite place to watch sport, say at home, live, in the pub, in a stadium? Where do you love most watching?
As in a venue or a pub? Okay.
Just, you get a chance to watch a sport.
Yes.
Is it in your favourite armchair with the children bringing you a glass?
No. It would be. There's nothing that beats being there. So I would say, let me go Principality Stadium.
Oh, good boy. Yeah. Well done.
best stadium in Britain, that. Best football rugby stadium in Britain.
Better than Tottenham?
Do you know, I haven't been to Tottenham yet.
Everybody, I haven't, I'm waiting for Daniel Levy for the invitation.
Principality Stadium, game's over, 5 minutes later, you're having a pint of Guinness.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
So what is your favourite food at a venue? So you're with your family.
Good question, yes.
What is it?
Good question. It would probably have to be a hamburger to remind me of whatever I was eating in 1985 and whatever its provenance was from
that's
a van
probably got
outside.
Cheese and grilled onions, yeah, I'm thinking.
Because I don't think, you know, you need, I think when you go to a venue, I mean, if someone asks you for a posh nut dinner, that's nice. But actually, for me, it is eating a hamburger in my seat.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, it's got to be in my
seat. And do you have a favourite anthem, song? Is there one that you like? I mean, for me, it's easy because it's the Welsh national anthem. But is there one that you, in any sport, you just love to hear the crowd as one singing?
Before Wales, sounds like I'm trying to get in your good books or jiffies. Before Wales played Russia in the football Euro 2004 playoff at the Principality Stadium, I was in the lift at the Hilton Inn and Bryn Terfel got in and I went, oh, that's Bryn Terfel. And I just sort of looked at him and I went, oh, hello. And anyway, 2 hours later, I'm in my seat at Principality Stadium and he sings Land of My Fathers. And I think I'm going to wet my knickers. I mean, it was extraordinary.
Perfection.
Absolutely extraordinary. And obviously, I don't speak Welsh, and I don't know what's going on. But every time it's sung, I think, I mean, you know, I'm proud of my Englishness and my Ukrainianness, actually, if we're there. But you know, that is in another stratosphere, Land of My Fathers. And it absolutely is.
Well, you're so welcome aboard. You're so welcome. So anyway, you're on board the Reef Gauche.
Yes.
And I'm giving you the option, because we're still on the dock. We can sail anywhere and forget the fact we're obviously landlocked.
Yes.
Where do you want this boat to go? Where's your dream destination?
I'd like to go. I've never watched cricket in the West Indies. I've watched cricket in most places, but I'd like to go to Antigua and watch cricket.
Okay,
that's where I'd really like to go.
And that's brilliant for pirates.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got a load of connections. You'd probably get tickets as well, so that's good. You can see this beautiful oak table that we're sitting at. We're going to feed you every night before we get to Antigua. But tonight, you get to choose with the chef what your three-course dinner is going to be. And I'm going to throw in cheese because I'm that kind of bloke, but because it's important. So it's three courses, not including cheese, that you'd like to have, and I'll order the steward to get going.
I'll have lobster for main course.
Okay. How are you having that? Are you having
freshly caught lobster, just cooked with a bit of, you know, nice bit of mayo and a nice green salad. I absolutely love a bit of lobster.
We've got lots of those. We've just got lobster, under the boat.
Lobster, Antigua. It's funny. I mean, I might even have fish. Do you know what? I might go fish and fish.
Okay.
It's really, I hope my cardiologist isn't listening. I might have to have clarified, you know, shrimps in clarified butter from Morecambe Bay to start with.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? You know the way they're in that butter and they don't move.
Yeah.
I mean, your arteries just scream. Do you want to reach the age of 60 or not? Well, have you taken your statins today?
It's really good that we don't have phones on in this century.
No, exactly. For pudding, what would I have for pudding? I mean, I will eat anything. You give me profiteroles, I'd eat half. I mean, I love pudding.
You've got to pick one. I'm going to hold
No, no. Okay. Profiteroles. Okay. Profiteroles, chocolate sauce. Yep. And then for cheese, I will have a bit of... I only got into cheese when I was about 20, which is actually really nice to get into it quite late. Mm-hmm. A bit of... I like oaked smoked cheddar. I like the oak. Oak smoked apple cheddar. Really like that.
Well, he's quite precise.
With a bit of...
chutney?
Chutney, but a bit of... I make my own jam and chutney and stuff. So I like a little bit of... is it membrillo? You know, the sort of orange paste. I made that last year from quinces, yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, yeah.
The next question is, do you have a hidden talent? I think you may have just shared
I love making jam and chutney.
So do you find that therapy from...
Really therapeutic. Okay. The wife's not so... When she comes and goes, why is there red splattering on the ceiling?
And do you use every saucepan in the house and just make...
Everything. Radio's up, turned loud. Every saucepan. It looks like a herd of bulls have been through. But I do find it... I like making straw... Oh, no, but I've got raspberries. I've got a vegetable patch at home.
Oh
yeah, I've got a bit, and I go up there and I take Test Match Special and I pick beans and I dig potatoes.
Wellies on.
Yeah, wellies on. Dog with me.
Oh, yeah, everyone else can just...
I don't care what they're doing. Yeah, and so come September, October, make crab apple jelly and quince, you know, quince jelly and everything like that and chutney. Oh yeah, yeah.
My God, this could be another career.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember what the first album was you ever bought or got your hands on?
Yes, Parallel Lines, Blondie. 1970s, brilliant. Heart of Glass, all that.
Oh my God, brilliant. It's like being...
I had a poster of Blondie on my... Had a poster of Blondie, of Debbie Harry, and of Kim Wilde.
Well, that shows very good taste.
Yeah, yeah.
We all did.
Yeah, we all did, yeah.
And if you could smuggle your most treasured possession on board, and I don't mean human being or anything like that, but just most... It's a pirate ship, we smuggle. That's what we do for a living. And we could just... You could take one thing, and I'm guessing it's not your rosette.
No, the rosette's lovely.
I mean, we can pin that on you now and keep it on you. But if there's just one thing you take with you to Antigua...
I think it would be very appropriate. So when I got going back to my dad. So when I got the first 11 at school, he said he was so chuffed because he was actually a very average cricketer. Forgive me if you're up there. He bought me a pair of wicketkeeping gloves to get the first 11 and a bat. And by my desk at home today... I saw it this morning, is a grey nickel single scoop, mid-1980s vintage bat. And we had a couple of good days, the bat and I, and it sits by my desk. And whenever I've got a sort of a long conversation to make, might be a bit tricky, or I want to discuss things with my agent or whatever, I walk around my study playing off drives, you know, literally. So I've got my phone in my right hand, because obviously top hand's what matters in batting. And I've got, I put a new handle on it about 2 years ago. I put a new yellow handle on it. What was the point of that?
This is hilarious because in the cupboard in my cabin, obviously he says keeping the metaphor alive for a little bit longer. There is a Duncan Fernley Magnum,
Is there?
Which I mean I was a terrible batsman, slogger, but I also put a new grip on. I have no idea what I... It just didn't look very nice.
No, it didn't look really... And also, when it's got no grip, it looks bad. So I literally walk around the study and go, yes, that's a good idea. I think we should go there this weekend. And I'm playing an off drive, or I'm playing a square cut or whatever. And I've got footballs in my study, which I, you know... Well, I don't juggle it because I'd smash the windows. But, you know, I sort of pretend I can. Yeah, play keepy uppy or whatever. Yes.
Well, I think given that we've got 3 weeks to get to Antigua, we'll make sure we have deck cricket. And if we could borrow that, Grey Nichols, if that's okay.
You know, when they always say on Desert Island Discs, what would it be? I would say to them, can I have a cricket set? So what I need is a bowling machine because I'm on my own.
Yep.
We could probably get away with coconuts, but if you'd let me have six balls, that's great. Yeah. And give me a bat. I don't need stumps because obviously we've got lots of driftwood.
Yeah.
And then by the time I'm rescued, please give me about 18 months because I need to perfect the on-drive.
You'll be ready for Sussex.
I'll be ready for Sussex.
Mark Pugach, this has been the fastest 34 minutes of my life. It's been such a pleasure to have you on and a guest around the captain's table. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.